The train jolted to a stop at a small station, pulling my family out of slumber. A faded schedule hung at a crooked angle near the station door, next to a dirt-encrusted window. Did all trains and train stations have dirty windows? I groaned and let my head hit the back of the seat. I'm reading the book from last month, the Stars in April. Awesome book. If you haven't gotten it yet, please get it. Anyway, this is Rich Bennett with Harford County Living, and I am excited to introduce to you award-winning author and editor, Kelly White. The Word with an Inquisitive Book Nerd.
Hi, this is Kelly White, host of The Word. I am the Inquisitive Book Nerd, and I'm here today with best-selling author Karen Whiting, and we are going to talk about her book, Growing a Mother's Heart. Karen, welcome. Really happy to have you.
Oh, good to be here with you, Kelly.
Would you like to lead us in prayer, Karen? That would be wonderful.
I sure would.
Thank you.
Dear Lord, we thank you for today. It is the day that you have made, so let us rejoice and let us be happy as we think about the mothers around us, the mothers from history, the mothers in the Bible, and how they teach us so many things. And let's celebrate motherhood today. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Karen. So your new book is Growing a Mother's Heart, Devotions of Faith, Hope, and Love from Mothers Past, Present, and Future. That's quite a mouthful.
It is. It's a little bit different this way. You know, we always like to see something a little different. And I like to study history, but I also love to do things around little children. And I thought, let's put them all into the book, that we can get the perspective of future moms from their cute little quotes. We can look at biblical moms and historic moms and learn from them too, as well as our contemporary moms.
Right. So it's a devotional, correct?
Yes.
And so it's a sort of a series of all different, it's got a lot of moving parts. It's got some essays and it's got some prayers and it has some biblical mothers, some stories of biblical mothers, and then some quotes from future moms, for quotes from little girls, which is really cute. So I noticed when I was reading that, you know, I edit a lot of devotional books, and most of them, most of the, you know, these narratives are told in first person, and I noticed that yours are told in third person.
Yes, it's hard to tell the historic stories and biblical mom stories in first person. So that sort of set it up to be third person as we look back at some of them. And we do have the I person, particularly with the wisdom from the future moms of the quotes of the children. But yes, it is a reflection of done in third person. And I think that works this time. You know, every book you have to make these types of decisions.
So I noticed too that a lot of the characters in some of these stories are named Karen.
Those are my stories, yes. There's a few others where I've used my middle name or a different name. So
I had a hunch those were about you. So so what's it like to write about yourself in third person?
Well, it's fine. I just always have to go back and see, did I make any slip-ups in here? To me and my, instead of keeping it third person. And yeah, that is kind of fun to do.
It maybe gives you a different perspective on some of these little anecdotes too, that looking at your own stories from another angle.
Yes, yeah, it is to look at that from the other angle and realize, you know, this can be any mom these things can happen to and do happen to.
Do you have a favorite story in the book?
Well, one of my favorites is the first story, A Treasured Kiss. Another one is the last story, After Never Ends, basically. After Isn't Over, I think it's called.
I liked that first story too. I thought that was really cute. I don't know if we should talk about it in detail. We might make a spoiler. But But that was a really cute story about a little child wiping off his mother's kiss. And I won't tell the rest because that would be a spoiler. So I have a favorite, the wisdom from future moms, the little girl quotes. I have a favorite. Can I share?
Yes, I'd love to have you share that.
My favorite one is the one, well, I'll read it. I had it marked here. Mom prays and reads the Bible in the morning. She says that's how she fills her tank to get through the day. Sometimes I think she needs to fill it again in the middle of the day. I thought that was so funny.
Yes, I know. I love what children say is always so precious, makes us laugh, but makes us pause and think too. They really have things that are amazing that they observe and notice.
So where did you get most of these stories from? Did you reach out to friends? Did you put out a calling on Facebook? How did you round up all of these anecdotes?
I did reach out to friends. I put a calling on groups of moms and where I was in touch with mothers. And I may have put out one calling on my Facebook profile, but that would have been when I put out a little meme first about moms, and then to those people within the comments, I put the call out. So they were people who were observing what I was saying and where I was talking about moms already. And that way I was finding people who were very interested in this topic.
And obviously you got a lot of good responses.
Yes. And there's 30 weeks. So that meant I had 30 different topics that I was going through in the book.
Now, tell us about your experience as a mother, Karen. I know you have kids and grandkids. Do you want to talk to the listeners a little bit about your family?
Sure. I love being a mother, and I really grew up in a very close-knit community that was all family. I grew up in a town with 2,000 people, and it seemed like a quarter of them must have been my relatives or else related to my relatives. My family founded that part of Connecticut. And so there were really lots and lots of descendants around me. And that really made a difference. But I also was the first girl of my generation. So when I was a teenager and people had babies, I was sent over to help out. So I learned a lot about being a mother, doing that and observing my aunts. Then I had my five children, but I married someone in the Coast Guard. So we moved from Connecticut to Hawaii, Michigan, New York, Florida, all sorts of places, Maryland. And that was a challenge in many ways too, especially with someone who went out to sea sometimes 60 days at a time, who was gone when Hurricane Andrew struck our house and did $99,000 of damage, who was, not always right there, and that made it a different type of a challenge as a mother.
How many grandkids do you have?
I have 12 grandchildren, and because my older daughter, Rebecca, adopted two girls, and one of them was basically an adult when she adopted her, so older than Rebecca would have had naturally, I now have great-grandchildren through her.
Ah, oh, you have great-grandchildren, too.
Yes.
Karen, what is your grandma name?
Just Grandma or Grandma Karen.
I know you have a lot of really strong maternal qualities. I know that when you lived here in Maryland, well, first off, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your time living in Maryland? And I know that while you were here in Maryland, you liked to bake for the guys over at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis.
Yes. A mother's always a mother, you know, that nurturing spirit. So with the Bible Study Officer Christian Fellowship group at the Naval Academy, Thursday evenings, we would provide a homemade dinner for them. And I would bake and bring dinner over many times. And with that, I would bring homemade bread, which they just gobbled up so quick. They loved the bread. And thankfully, my whole wheat bread made four loaves at a time because I was making that many to bring over to them with the dinner. And it also stretches out the meal. I learned that years ago when my children were teens, and I had 22 straight years of teenagers with my children because of the age differences from the oldest to the youngest. And when my husband retired and lost the job he was supposed to get and didn't have one for a couple of years, we would have 12 people at the table for dinner. I had my own children, these others who would come, and I would just make bread and particularly put dough in to make pretzels so that the teens who came in, especially any new one, would take part in helping to finish up by shaping those pretzels and decorating them, you know, with the butter and seeds or sesame seeds or salt or whatever we were doing and baking them. And while they were doing that, I would talk a little bit about how we did dinner, because I found many of these children, they were used to TV dinners at home, or they could come to the Whiting House, right? And they didn't know how to set the table. They didn't know how to pass food, say grace before they started eating or converse or any of those things. And this way I could just weave that in. And by the time they sat down, they felt they were more part of the family. And that worked out very well. And you know, it's nice to do those things, and that's part of reaching out and being a mother. And lots of mothers end up being the house where the neighbors all congregate, right?
Well, I'm sure that they miss that.
Well, I hope some of them have become parents that now have children who fill their house.
So you lived, I know, like right on the other side of the Bay Bridge. What was that area that you lived in?
Delmarva. I was on the Eastern Shore.
Right. And how long were you there?
I was there 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
Really quite a while. That was where my husband ended up dying from breast cancer. So we had that happen while we were there. Great neighborhood. So such friendly neighbors. So supportive.
So you moved recently from Maryland to Florida, correct?
4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I guess you're used to moving around a lot, but do you feel that the moving affects your writing or your writing style or your writing habits or your patterns?
It doesn't affect my writing that much because, you know, I take my office with me, obviously, and I find when I move, I have a new group of people around me to learn about who I am, and it sort of extends my platform, you might say, and my speaking to new places and getting known somewhere else. So that's been good. I'm even speaking this evening in person to a small group because groups are staying small still, but I've had my COVID shots.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So one of your other books it is brought to my mind because, you know, we're talking about all this baking. I know you have another book. Well, you have lots of books, Karen. And why don't you share your email or your website address here for our readers so they can check out your collections.
Yes, my website address, KarenWhiting.com. So K-A-R-E-N and Whiting like the fish, W-H-I-T-I-N-G.com. I have 26 books out, and the book you were referring to is The Gift of Bread, Recipes from the Heart and the Table. And that book has 60 recipes in it, plus lots of tips on making bread and what happens if bread doesn't come out right, what do you do and why did that happen, as well as heartwarming stories and biblical insights for every chapter in the book. There are 30 chapters, so maybe it's 30 recipes, but there are plenty of recipes in there for quick breads, refrigerated doughs, yeast breads, biscuits, all types of baking breads that you can share and enjoy.
It's a great book. I'm thinking that this book and The Gift of Bread and Growing a Mother's Heart, the two together would make great Mother's Day gifts, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would, or even Valentine's Day. But they're good. They're good for moms. And this book for moms, you know, is to really, you always have to know what's the focus of the book. What am I really doing? And what's the heart of it? What's the question within the book that you're answering and the gift for the reader? So my question was that question a lot of moms have. Am I good enough? Am I a failure? Am I doing okay? And it's to assure them that your love makes you good enough. You are fine. God's choice for you to be a mom makes you good enough. And everything is built around that. So we talk about support moms need, and we talk about the failures, and how those are actually learning experiences for us and our children, and the struggles as well as the joys, that treasured kiss and all the other things that we as moms treasure.
the joy, balancing the joys and the challenges, right, Karen?
Exactly. That's, we're on that emotional roller coaster all the time. It's a good thing. Oops, no, this happened. Well, now this happened. Now it's good again. And always knowing that at the end of the day, we can sit back and look at our children and say, I love them.
You know, the love that we have for our kids truly is unconditional. I mean, if ever there's a love with no conditions, it's that love that we have for our kids.
Yes, it is. And we want to be the best mom. And so, you know, we want to know how, but we don't always want to be told. And devotion is such a great thing because you share these stories. And through the story, people learn things. And we often remember what we learn from a story better than anything else. And that's just a great way to know what's happening and to think about what's going on. You know, I have a story of a neighbor. She was up in Maryland where her daughter came down one day. She's walking with her mom and she stops me and says, Miss Karen, I have to come in. You have to give me some of your sprinkle powder because my mom has lost her sparkle. And I had made this powder for my granddaughter's birthday, who was a friend of this little girl. And I had put the makeup glitter inside the powder. So when they put it on themselves, they sparkled all over. So she wanted her mom to sparkle again. And we came in and had her mom just rest with a cup of tea, and her daughter could put some sparkle on her. And then her mom was just sitting there having the tea. So I started talking to the little girl and I said, so how did your mom lose her sparkle? And she told me the story of what had really happened and the mess they had left behind at the house because her mother just had to get out and take a walk. And we talked about what she could do when she got home. So it was just an a cute thing. But, you know, little children are so great and they notice those things about their moms and they have a heart of compassion for their mom. They do want to help their mom. They want to make her day better if they have done something to make it bad.
Karen, I love sparkles. I love glitter. I love to leave sparkles everywhere I go. I've been putting it in my hand sanitizer. So that's my thing. So I know that you, one of your other books, I have a few of your books in front of me right now from my collection. And I know one of your other books, Nature Girl, A Guide to Caring for God's Creation, you co-authored with your daughter, Rebecca White, shares a last name with me, but we're not related. But I know that that you two co-authored that book. So can you talk to me about what it's like to work as mother and daughter on a project like this?
Well, yes, especially since we have another book we're co-authoring coming out in December, which is a super craft book focused on kindness. So every time you co-author, it's a different journey, and you need to work on how you're doing it. I find a spreadsheet, and she and I both like spreadsheets, is great because we can put down what's happening and decide who's doing what. We can flip it around if we need to. In Nature Girl, we did it by chapters, and so every chapter, we would kind of sit down, and we had put down what the science experiment was and what the craft was and what we were, the gist of the writing that we were doing about the intro of the whole thing and all sorts of components that were in the book, and we would kind of divvy that up. And there were sometimes, like, she lived in Florida, I was in Maryland. In the winter, we had to do the solar energy experiments. I said, well, you've got sun, you're down in the Keys, why don't you do that? She was like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Mom. And that's how it often happened. It worked out very well. And we're doing the same thing as we go through with this book, where we have different units. So sometimes one of us does a whole unit, like I did the unit of 10 crafts on puppetry, and she did a lot of the unit on the greeting cards, and some we just kind of did together. But it works out well, and we edit each other. The big thing as mom and daughter is you don't, as a mom, want to be telling or taking over anything. And as a daughter, you don't want to be rebelling at that time. You want to be able to work together as a team. And that's what we really do. And it's great. When your daughter grows up, she can be your best friend. And you can do so many things with her. But the relationship does change. You are not the mom of a two-year-old anymore. You are a mom of a grown woman. And you need to walk beside, not be the one guiding and teaching, telling her things. Now it's sharing with her.
And what is the title of the new book?
I'm not sure I'll get it quite right. I think the final title is now Super Book of Bible Craft Gifts.
Okay. Well, we'll have to put that up on the website as well.
Yeah. Maybe you'll interview her.
Yeah, that would be fun. So that one comes out in December. I'll put that on my list.
Yes. And then the whites can get together. You know, you may not be related bloodlines, but you're related as sisters in Christ.
That's right. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've always felt a connection with you, Karen.
Oh, and too with you. I just have loved you. And we should we let them know who edited that Nature Girl book?
Sure. You can chat about that if you'd like.
Kelly was our editor. And in fact, someone else had done some freelance editing on it. And really, it was just such a botched up job that Kelly came in and gave it new life and brought the life back into it. We had been so upset, my daughter and I, about what had been done in the original edits. And we were so thankful that the publisher decided, we can't go with this. Let's get a different editor. And that was just fabulous to have you do that.
Thank you. It was a blessing for me as well. And it has led to a friendship, you know, between you and me, which I'm in much appreciation for.
Yes, I was so glad we lived like 45 minutes or so apart of the time. And you said, you know what, can we just meet? And it was such a great thing because you didn't know what had happened to the book when you looked at the other writings I had done. And I didn't know what to say to you about what had happened to the book and how can we fix it. And communication is so key when you are writing a book. Communication is key as a mom. It's key in life. And that helped us so much to have that meetup.
You know, it was great. I felt that was something that God had lined up because we had, you know, I had gotten that project. I was under contract at the time with HarperCollins Christian Publishing, and they sent me this project to edit, and it read like a textbook when it came on my desk.
Yes, the other editor had changed it from a Christian girl's book to a textbook, and for not even the right age, not even for the age group it was meant for.
It was pretty much a drag. but we punched it back up, and it was, you're right, wonderful that we were actually, I found out that you lived on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and we were actually able to meet pretty regularly on this project, which was wonderful. But by the way, at the time, you know, I was told not to have any communication with the author, but I said, you know, I broke that rule because I knew how important it is, like you said, to communicate, and even better that we were able to meet in person and actually lay those pages out and go through every page.
And it was so great. My daughter was also so thankful, even though she was down in Florida and did not get to meet you. It was wonderful. And so often that's what we need as moms. That's why as moms, we need our friends' night, our girls' night out or whatever to communicate with one another even. And that helps us to help our children get along with each other. If the moms can communicate with one another, it breaks down those barriers that you might have of jealousy or not understanding one another, or the preconceived ideas. I've read this and what's this person going to be like that I meet, even as an editor meeting me, the author. So it was, communication is such a foundational thing that we need.
Yes. So one of your other books that I have in front of me is, and you and I share a publisher, we both have books under the Healthy Learning imprint.
Yes.
Mine is the Bible Adventure Book of Scavenger Hunts, and yours is Nature Bible Puppet Mania. And I heard you mention the puppets when you were talking earlier about the craft books. I wanted to bring that up to the listeners that you're a puppeteer.
Yes, I studied puppetry at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Institute of Puppetry in Connecticut. And one of my teachers had been connected with my childhood favorite TV show, Howdy Doody. Margot Rose and her husband manipulated and created and made Howdy Doody. And she was one of my teachers for puppetry. So that was amazing. She also taught Jim Henson, who came up and guest lectured at one point. So I got to meet him. And just, I never knew that I would later move to Florida and have a television show on puppetry and write puppetry books and have this huge puppet team and ministry. So that became fun. And later on today for a homeschool group, which is a very large homeschool group, I'm going to be doing a Zoom teaching or Facebook Live teaching within that group on puppetry, on that book.
Oh, that's great. When is that?
Oh, that's at 1 o'clock, but you have to be a member of that homeschool group to see it. So,
oh, it's today.
It's today, yes.
Okay. You know, I've seen you make some really cool puppets out of the funniest things, you know, just household items like kitchen utensils and cleaning supplies, not liquid supplies, but you know, the scrubby things.
Right, right. Yes, I have used the car wash mitts, and I have used the feather dusters, the feathers off of those, and I've also used the duster handle thing, the Swiffer duster kind of thing. I've used that as a handle, as a platform to put a puppet on that you can then draw a string and have the mouth open and close and hold it up above you to make, that's what Miss Fern is made from, among other puppets.
Miss Fern?
Yes, she's got this whole big, long, green, feathery boa, and with her face, and it's, the head is resting on the hand, the other end from the handle of the duster. The Swiffer duster can turn 90 degrees. So when you have that at that 90 degree angle, you can put the top and bottom of a mouth there, one above, one below, and have a drawstring thing that you can pull down, and it makes the mouth open and close. So that's what Miss Fern is made from.
That's really cool. You're very innovative. I've seen you, you know, pick up like, you know, bottle caps and things like that, that I know you're going to use in a craft project or something. In fact, I can't remember what the object was, but you and I were at an event one time, and I started to throw it away. You said, don't throw that away. I can use that.
Yes, I use a lot of things. It's imagination. You know, one of my grandmothers when I was young was a person who did a lot of crafting, and some of the crafts she taught me and she had made up went into some of my books. So she was one of those beginning recyclers, using materials that she could recycle into crafts and things. And I learned from her to do that and to look at things from a different perspective of what it can be, not just what it is.
Yes, you have a very visionary, and you have that other, what do you call that, the storytelling that you do where you cut out the little...
Oh, the cut and tell storytelling, yeah, where I fold a piece of paper and every part becomes part of the story and opens up to be a new magical picture. It's fun to do that. I'll have a couple of those in the book in December. I don't know what ones yet. They may be new ones. I'm not sure until I get to that part of the book in another month or so.
Those stories amaze me. Let me see if I can describe it for the listeners. It's kind of difficult to describe if you're not looking at it, but it's essentially a lot like when you sort of cut out maybe a snowflake from a piece of paper where you fold it up and cut, or if you cut maybe like a string of, some people cut like a string of dolls. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So I've seen you do that where you take some scissors and a piece of paper and you'll cut off a little, you know, some shoes, and then you'll cut off some, you know, well, why don't you tell them, you know better than I do what the details are of the little cutouts that you do.
Yes, if you fold it sort of for a snowflake, I actually take a circle of paper and fold it in half three times so it ends up like an eighth. And I cut on the folded side. If I cut a number one towards the center, the point of the circle, it looks like a number one. But you open it up and it becomes a cross. And then the next shape I do on that particular story, I open up and it looks like four birds. And I always say they're going to the four corners of the earth. And then I cut out a little person that when that opens up, there's two people and they're connected with the heart. And when that opens, there's four, and it opens and there's a whole circle of eight little children all connected with hearts. And then I actually have also cut out these what looks like little shoes, but they open up to be hearts. And the bottom of the whole thing that's left opens up to be a crown.
It's amazing. And you're telling a story as you're cutting, and it's just,
yes,
I love it. It's ingenious.
Yeah, I have another one with angels and one for Christmas and different ones that I've done. Do I just get this image in my mind and I just start cutting in it?
It's really amazing. It's really unique. I've never seen anybody else who can do that.
There are some people that do different cut and tell stories in different ways. Some use paper plates, in fact. And it's spatial relationship. You know, my degree is mathematics, and that is a spatial relationship type of a vision you can see in your head. You see those shapes, and you see what one will open up to be.
So we've talked about several of your books. Are there any others that you would like to share?
I have one coming out in September that's very dear to my heart, too. And that one is on family prayer. It's the third in a series of family devotionals, 52-week devotions, so that families can't always do a daily thing. That just gets to be too much with all kinds of sports and homework and other things that they don't even know are going to go on before that week comes sometimes. So this one is 52 weekly family devotions to teach children to pray. And every week.
Is that the title? 52?
Yes, okay. 52 weekly family devotions to teach children to pray. And every week there's a different way to pray, plus 3 hands-on activities to learn the concept. And every week, the title of the week isn't a sentence or a title as much as a question, because children have lots of questions about prayer. And so, you know, why doesn't God answer me fast? Or what's worship? You know, just the questions that they have, and the focus is on answering that question that week with some hands-on activities as well as the prayer and some chat prompts for them. So I think it's a way for families to delve into prayer with their children, to learn lots of aspects of prayer, and to try different methods to see how can you best pray together as a family when you've tried all these things, what really clicks for you.
Do you have a favorite section of that book that you would love to share as an example?
Well, one of the favorites for my family were the powwows, and another one that my grandchildren really love is the cup of blessings. To talk about blessings, I have a jar, an empty glass jar that sits in the middle of a bowl, and I have a couple of little bowls around the table that have colored water. One has blue and one has red, and little measuring cups, and each child takes a turn getting a cup full of their water and pouring into the big jar. And as they pour it in, they thank God for a blessing they had. Thank God for my family. I thank God that today I got my math and understood it, whatever it is, until it's all filled. And then it starts to overflow and you all put more cups in. And as you're putting it in, the blue and the red, of course, mix together and you get swirls of purple in the water. And then it overflows the jar. And I say to them, that's what happens. God gives us so many blessings. It overflows from our heart for us to bless other people.
Oh, I love that. You're always so full of fun crafts and activities.
Yeah, I just love playing. I don't have to grow up if I write those types of books. But now, even in the book for moms that's coming out, I incorporate doing some of those things. You know, one of my daughters that I did one thing to help the children when they were two getting out of control, and she has a different way. She yells out really loud, you know, something like, what is the day? What is the day? Until they yell back, it's the day that God has made. And then they all start going, let us be glad and rejoice in it. Then she calls them together for their deep time, where they go, not just deep, but it means they all bring their Bible together and talk about what God has put on their hearts. It brings them out of that fighting with each other, bickering, whining, whatever it is, and gets them back on focus. And I think that's a wonderful thing that she does. And so I talk a little bit about that in the mom's book, and I also have a little bit about that in the prayer book about how to do that type of prayer.
Do you have any other books in the wings? I know you always have a lot of projects up in the air at once.
I do. Tyndale was so wonderful. I did a book with them several years ago with Jesse Floria, who's the editorial director of youth publications that focus on the family. And we did a book for boys, the 1-year devotion for active boys. Well, they have done a derivative project from that, where they took 60 of the devotions that all have to do with courage, and in November they release a book, Devos for Brave Boys. And it's, an excerpt from that book, so it gives it a whole new life and will be a book that will be less expensive and can also introduce those people who want to go back and buy the boys' book. The boys' book has already had 3 printings, so it's been doing well, and they've decided that they're going to do this with it. And all I had to do was help choose the cover out of 5 choices, and it'll come out. Certainly I will help promote the book. So that's coming out. And then I'm doing a Bible study on Philippians for another publisher. That's an in-house job. So I have, 5 books coming out. Isn't that crazy?
It sounds just like you, Karen. I wouldn't expect anything less. What about events? You know, I know that you stay pretty busy with the book touring and the events. And how has the current social situation affected your, your event schedule?
Right. Well, I haven't traveled as much. I did travel last July to speak at a writer's conference in Northeast Pennsylvania, where they didn't have much COVID at the time and everything went well. No one came down with COVID. And then in August last year, I, with my daughter, Rebecca, we drove up to Delaware for the Christian Product Expo. And we didn't try to see friends or anybody. I have so many friends up that way, including you, because of the COVID. And everything there was kept very much social distancing. So that went well also. And now next week, I'm going to the Winter Christian Product Expo in North Carolina in Charlotte. So I'm going to stop at Rebecca's house. She's moved to North Carolina. And we're going to the book with her and then go over to the show and back to Rebecca's house before I come back home. So that's going on. I'm also possibly going to be in Blue Ridge in May to speak at a writer's conference. It depends on how many registrants they get, how big they can make the faculty. And then in August, hopefully, I will be at another event in November. Tonight, I am speaking at a church locally, but that is a small group because they had to limit the how many people could attend. But at least there's a little bit opening up of getting out and speaking too. And I'm doing more Zoom talks like today. I do at least one a month for the homeschool group. There's over 17,000 families in that group. And it's all recorded so they can look at it later.
Is that the one that you referred to earlier? Is that the Blue Ridge Writers Christian Writers?
Yes, that is. They are having it in person, but they're kind of watching before they extend some of the faculty and watching how many register. So I am supposed to be there, but I'm on hold right now. So we'll see whether I'm really there or not.
Yeah, I have to tell you, every single one of my book touring events in 2020 was either canceled or turned into an online event.
Yes, that happened to a lot. I had the 2 that were not canceled last year, and some things are opening up. In October, I should be at the Florida Christian Writers Conference and speaking there. And that, I think by then we'll be fine, but we'll see. I know that my youngest son's wedding was postponed from this March to sometime after September 1. And we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, the Legend of the Fairy Stones won an award from the Virginia Outdoor Writers Association, and there was supposed to be a big conference in Charlottesville, and that was canceled. I was supposed to speak at the American Folklore Society's annual meeting, and that was canceled, or postponed, I should say. And then a whole lot of, different book signings and other events that were turned into like Facebook Live.
Yes, and for some people, that's the first time they faced all of this. For me, with Hurricane Andrew, I wasn't writing books then. I wasn't speaking. I was praying about doing that. But life was canceled then. Scouting things, school, so much was canceled for a long time. And then with Hurricane Irma down here, every event I had that year and I had books releasing got canceled because of that hurricane. So it happens in, usually it's just in a region that you have it. This time it's been worldwide, not just our states, our nation, but everywhere that so much was canceled.
So are you doing many online appearances?
I have, I've done some. I won't say that I've done a lot. I've done more. Well, I did a lot of Facebook Live with my bread book, and those went really well. I was getting hundreds every time. And with the craft book, I know I'll do a lot of Facebook Lives. With the mom's book, I'm planning to do some, and I'll be picking that up in March because the book does release February 23rd and doing that. But I'm doing some of these closed group ones like the homeschool, where I'm doing a number of Zooms regularly with them, at least one a month. So what changes things.
What is the homeschooling network that you're affiliated with?
The Homeschool Curriculum Fair. And as I said, it has more than 17,000 people in it. I applied to be a vendor. It took 6 months before I was approved. So I was only approved in January. I've just started. I'm just getting to know the people. They're just getting to know me. And I'm doing... This is my second Facebook Live with them. This one's on puppetry. I can choose what I want it to be on every month. And yesterday there was a giveaway of my puppet book and one of the kits to make one of the puppets in the book that was announced, and that will be drawn on Sunday. So they have the week to put in comments to be one of the winners, or two, there'll be two winners. So I know that I have two friends in there who do fabulous on selling to that market and interacting and engaging with that market of homeschoolers. And I don't know how I'll do. Some of them have more core curriculum books, and those, of course, are bought up very quickly. I have more of the ancillary products, the puppetry books that gives you the art and can also be integrated into your curriculum.
Have you noticed with the pandemic that so many other kids are home, have you noticed that the participation in these homeschooling networks has increased or expanded quite a lot?
That one has very much expanded. There was a smaller one in the Orlando area that has kind of shut down for a while, but that's more because the person running it, her children have grown up. And so I think something new will sprout up because of that. And the Florida Homeschool Conference will take place in May. I don't have a table at it this year because it's when I'm maybe supposed to be in Blue Ridge, and I'm looking to see how this online one goes. So I may just stick with that for a while and not worry about going to the one in person. That can be very expensive as a vendor. So we'll see what happens. It's nice to be in touch with homeschoolers around the country, and hopefully I can bring some of them in to be part of my launch teams in the future. I didn't know them soon enough to ask them to be part of the launch team for the mom's book.
Well, I know that, so many moms right now are struggling with educating from home and are probably looking for fun books, a lot like the ones that you do for kids. So before we wind this up, why don't you talk about some of your other, I know you have some where you do little miniatures and a lot of projects and just fun activities that you're the queen of that. You're the queen of the crafts and fun activities. So it's just things that moms and dads can do at home with while they're all quarantining. And
right. We've all already mentioned the Nature Girl book, which is really, other than the first chapter, everything could be for boys and girls because it's on sustainability and nature and energy and all those things. There's experiments and quizzes and lots of activities and information. There's the craft books, especially this craft book coming out in December will be a very good one. And even my cooking book is used as home ec by a lot of people. And the nice thing with home ec when you're baking is there's a lot to do with that, with measuring and all. I did a whole course to go along with that book for the homeschool community that is with the old schoolhouse with their homeschool followers. So
that's the old schoolhouse. Wait, it's
the old schoolhouse.
Schoolhouseteachers.com is where you go to get those lessons. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And
go ahead.
Have you done one with them?
Yes, I do. I have some curriculum up there, some scavenger hunt.
Okay, right. And I have a couple with them. I have one on Advent because I have a family Advent devotional book, which is to prepare your children for Christmas with hands-on activities that are very simple to do every day for the 25 days leading up to Christmas. And so that's another one that brings in the Bible, but also has hands-on activities and talks about the symbols that we use at Christmas time, because it's good no matter what you're doing to learn about symbols and why we have different symbols for our faith, as well as our country has, you know, the flag, the eagle, and different symbols. So there's also a book that I've done that's a historical nonfiction, and that is Faith and Courage. It's stories of faith and courage from the home front, from the French and Indian War to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where it's a true daily story from 1755 till 2012 of what happened on the home front during American wars. And it is probably one of the best resources for women's American history because it focuses on what the women did during those periods of time, how that brought them into the workforce, changed everybody's view of women, brought them the vote, is even in that book. All of those things for women, as well as how they sustained the homes during very hard times.
And Karen, you know, I don't think we talked enough about it in your Growing a Mother's Heart book. There's a lot of, it's not fiction, it's true stories of mothers in history. So there are a lot of cool history lessons in there that moms can share with their kids that are home.
Back to the mother of Kublai Khan is in there. So others you might never expect to find out about. And their courage, their faith as moms and what they did, their joys as moms, all of those are in there, as well as, of course, your biblical moms or historic moms, too, that are true stories.
Right. But aside from the biblical moms, you also have some in, you know, more contemporary history. More recent history, I should say.
I do. I have them, you know, from a lot in the 1900s, even the beginning of this century, I think. I'm trying to remember when some of the women that I mentioned passed on to heaven. But yes, there are many in there that we can learn so much from these women and know that whether it's Abigail Snelling, who was the first woman to be a real military woman as far as being mother, wife, sister, daughter of military people, the Dolly Madison, Harriet Tubman, Eleanor Roosevelt, just a lot of different ones that are in there. Sojourner Truth, who really, what a woman, remarkable woman who came out of slavery to free other people that a lot of people don't know that much about her.
Oh gosh. You know, I watched the Harriet movie. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's so good. They deviate a little bit from the facts, as most, you know, those historical movies
do. Historical fiction does that. Mine are historical nonfiction in the book. There's a little difference.
But nevertheless, it's just so moving. And you know, there's a lot of, along the Eastern Shore, all of the Underground Railroad, routes. And a lot of, you know, the visitor centers out there now in, I think it's in Easton. Is that where it is? Are you familiar with that?
I think you're right. Well, they were just working on that when I was moving away. And a friend of mine did a book about one of the men, Douglas. I can't think of his full name. But yes, you might want to talk to her sometime, in fact, with the research she had to do about the Eastern Shore and the book that she wrote for children.
Are you referring to Frederick Douglass?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And Frederick Douglass. So my friend Nancy Sanders, who lives in California, came out to the Eastern Shore and she visited me while she was there. She writes a lot of books for children and she did a book about his life.
Yeah, there's a lot of that Underground Railroad history up and down the Eastern Shore now, which is amazing. And I haven't visited. I've been traveling back and forth a lot to Chincoteague. I have a little spot on Chincoteague Bay now. And someone had told me about a statue, a Harriet Tubman statue, and I've been looking for it every time I drive, and I couldn't find it. But I think I just figured out that it was a temporary installation. So I don't think it's there now.
Interesting.
Just the statue, but there is a visitor center that I really want to visit. I have a whole new renewed interest in Harriet Tubman, who will soon be on our $20 bills.
Oh, very interesting. Well, in Connecticut, my aunt's home, which was built in 1710, I think, was originally had three slaves. The slave quarters are still standing in the backyard, the stone house, and they freed their slaves in 1774 when a preacher came through Connecticut and told everybody they should never have slaves. Everybody freed their slaves. That preacher should have gone throughout the whole country, but that's what he did. And later, that house, because of an underground passageway to escape warring Indians that they had made, was used as part of the Underground Railroad.
Okay. It's just fascinating to me. Now, Harriet Tubman never gave birth. She was born in Dorchester County. Now, she never gave birth, but she did adopt a child later in her life. So she was a mom.
Yes, and so she is in my book because of that. And, you know, I think that we have to think about moms may not give birth, but they may be moms because of adoption, or spiritual moms because of nurturing people and what they have done for many people. Included in this book is the woman who wrote so many gift cards. And we know her so much because of her writings. And I'm trying to think of her.
Well, and we honor all women, as you say, because, you know, aunts and sisters.
Right.
You know, I think as women, we do innately have those, you know, just maternal qualities about us.
Yes, but that was Helen Steiner Rice, who we think of as American Sunshine, she was called at one point.
Oh, I like that.
She wrote encouraging words, including wonderful words that uplifted motherhood.
Okay, Karen, so I think that, is there anything else that you'd like to share before we wrap this up?
No, I think we've covered so much, and I just so appreciate you, Kelly, as a friend, as an editor, as someone I can talk to about writing. And
Thank
we
you.
All should appreciate our friends.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate that. I appreciate you as well. Thank you so much for being on here.
You have been listening to The Word with an inquisitive book nerd right here on the Chesapeake Podcast Network. Make sure you join Kelly next month as she speaks to Nathan Whitaker, author of Leaning on the Promises of God for Men.